Hitler has only got one ball. Goring has two, but very small. Himmler is rather similar, but poor old Goebbels has no balls at all.
Hi guys, welcome to the podcast you've all been waiting for. History forgives, but we don't, or not. That's always the same one, man. So today I have to say sorry, you know, about the delay of delivering new content, yeah, because the or new episodes, if you want, because sometimes you have to do editorial decisions, yeah, make new content and do new research, yeah. And I was about to record the episode 3 of, because we have already written that. Of the red lines that we are doing the show on, and break the conflict against Russia and the Ukraine, yeah. And I thought about it myself, you know. It's like it's not that we are trying to make, like, how can I explain? We're not trying to make it, you know, like a thing that we are being you know, slaves to fashion, yeah. Now we all have to talk about the Russia and the Ukraine, but it's an opportunity to remember us, if we really do want the Soviet Union back. Hell no, fucking hell, hell no. So that's what I was thinking, you know, I'm gonna, of course I was doing the red lines, but oh man, come on, this is like some things we have to remind ourselves. Why are the Ukrainians with such a bad vibe with the Russians, and the Russians want it back and stuff like that? It's fucking horrible, you know. So it's a history with a lot of things, but we're just gonna talk about one event basically about the Ukraine, and we're gonna talk about another one that I think it's really funny against the Soviet Union. And if you are seeing now the name of the episode, I call it Black Nose Day and the Widowmaker and the Holodomor. The Black Nose Day, you know, is, I can't, oh man, it's like, I don't want to joke this. If you're not you know, a UK resident, you don't know what this is. Maybe there's a, you know, like something similar in your country where you listen to this. It's like the, you know, like a fundraiser for poor children. Yeah, we call Red Nose Day because they put, like, you know, clowns' noses and stuff like that. And I start thinking about it, man. It's not to you know, to, because the fundraiser is spectacular. Yeah. But I just wanted to, you know, do something else with this title, yeah. So I figure out Black Nose Day because I think Putin is a fucking clown and Ukraine is gonna be his grave. So no problem, man. It's like he's just you know, he's such a stupid person because he has to think that this country has like the GDP of Italy. It just has, like, you know, like what? They want to get to Kiev and put somebody else there because they don't have money for petrol. And the funny thing is, you know, I started remembering about a movie I saw like some years ago, the K-19 Widowmaker, yeah? And, you know, that thing was based on a real story, yeah? But, you know, it's a film adaptation, and you know, it's some things of that nature, yeah? Because it's a well-known subject. But we had to go and get the lowdown of all that movie, you know, because the movie, you know, sometimes, you know, gets split a little bit for you know, film adaptation. You know, it's like you're not gonna put everything there. So I went and I started to figure out, man, I'm gonna do the Widowmaker and the Holodomor. Holodomor is a very serious subject, and I'm gonna make jokes about it. All right, but the K-19 we can. You know, it can, because it's like Soviet, I don't know, how can I say it, man? Soviet bullshit to the max, yeah? It's like those kind of things that only happen in the old days of the Soviet Union, yeah? But You know, let's start dissecting the K-19. You know, I'm going to explain more or less what the K-19. Yeah. All right. So we're going to start with the Widowmaker. The K-19 was the first sub-series of Project 658, the first generation of Soviet nuclear submarines equipped with nuclear ballistic missiles. Sorry about that. The boat was hastily built by the Soviets in response to United States developments in nuclear submarine in the part of the arms race. Yeah. So check this out. You know, this is FS. It's built like you know, you're building Lego. It's fucking crazy. It's just, you know, it's like that. They do it, we have to do it. They do it, we have to do it. But, you know, you didn't give the time to think that it's a nuclear vessel. It's a nuclear submarine, yeah? And it's just like, you know, orders from the top, from Stalin, from whoever, you know, had this thing on his head, yeah? That's it, man. It's fucked up. In the late 1950s, the leaders of the Soviet Union were determined to catch up with the United States and began to build a nuclear submarine fleet. The boat was pushed through production and rushed through testing. It suffered from poor workmanship and was accident-prone from the beginning. Many Soviet naval officers felt that the ships were not fit for combat. The crew aboard the first nuclear submarines of the Soviet fleet was provided with a high-quality standard of food, including smoked fish, sausages, fine chocolate and cheese, unlike the standard fare given to the crews of naval vessels. So, even here, you checked it out. You know, it's like you're going to put like the Love Boat, a cruise ship, you know, like with nuclear missiles on board. But it's fucked up, yeah? K-19 was ordered by the Soviet Navy on 16 of October 1957. Her keel was laid on 17 of October 1958 on the naval yard at Severodvinsk. Several workers died building the submarine. Two workers were killed when a fire broke out, and later six women gluing rubber lining to a water cistern were killed by fumes. Beautiful stuff. While the missiles were being flooded, an electrician was crushed to death by a missile tube cover. An engineer fell between two compartments and died. Nice one. So it started, you know, maybe it was just on the water and it started to really fuck up, yeah? The boat was launched and named on 8th of April 1959, breaking with tradition. A man, Captain Ferdinand Panov, yeah, instead of a woman, was chosen to smash the ceremonial bottle. Normally with boats, if you're not a seaman like sperm, yeah, a seaman or a sailor or what the fuck, you know, normally it's a woman that goes in because it's motherhood and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't want to talk about it, but you understand what I'm saying, yeah? The champagne bottle across the ship's stern, the bottle failed to break, instead sliding along the propellers and bouncing off the rubber-coated hull. This traditionally viewed among sea crews as a sign that the ship was unlucky. Captain First Rank Nikolai Zatayev was the first commander of the Senate. Vasily Atvitov was the executive officer of the new Otel-class ballistic missile submarine K-19. Even the name was fucking horrible. An Otel-class submarine. You know, what they're going to do? You know, like they're going to serve roast beef and stuff like that when they are in fucking sea? I don't know. This in January 1960, confusion among the crew during a watch change led to improper operation of the reactor, and the reactor control rod was bent. The damage required the reactor to be dismantled for repairs. The officers on duty were removed, and Captain Panov was demoted. The submarine ensign was hoisted for the first time on 12 July 1960. It underwent sea trials from 13 to 17 July 1960, and again from 12 of August through 8 November 1960. So this is the date that, you know, was after the incident, you know, because we're going to talk about the incident in itself, you know, because we have to have the full lowdown of the boat. And we're going to talk about what happened next, because if people think that they scrapped the submarine, they didn't. That's the beauty part of the fucking Soviet Union. You know, it's beautiful. Yeah. Traveling 70,307 kilometers, the ship was considered completed on 12 of November 1960 after surfacing from a full power run. The crew discovered that most of the hull's rubber coating had detached. Beautiful, this one. It's a submarine, yeah? And the entire surface of the boat had to be recoated. During a test drive to maximum depth of 300 meters, flooding was reported in the reactor compartment, and Captain Zatayev ordered the submarine to immediately surface, where heeled over his port side due to the water it had taken on. It was later determined that during construction, the workers had failed to replace a gasket. In October 1960, the galley crew disposed of wood from the equipment crates through the galley waste system, clogging it. This led to flooding of the ninth compartment, which filled one-third of full water. In December 1960, a loss of coolant was caused by a failure to main circuit pump. Special call, the Severodis managed to repair in at sea within a week. The boat was commissioned on 30 of April 1961. The submarine had a total of 139 men aboard, including missile men, reactor officers, torpedo men, doctors, cooks, stewards, and several observing officers were not part of the standing crew. Yeah. So you are understanding, this was like you know, a boat that started to fuck up even before it goes in the water, even before the first mission. And we had to think about this shit. You know, they put on jeopardy, you know, everything that we thought about. This is the Soviet thinking, you know. You can't be on the back foot, yeah. You always have to be what the fucking Americans did. It's fucking crazy, man. I saw the movie and I was like shocked, because for what I understood about the movie, the story only was released, I think, a number of years after the what happened, yeah, because it was decommissioned files from the old Soviet Union, yeah. So this story is completely a mind fuck. Trust me, man. If you go watch the movie, the K-19 Widowmaker, yeah, it's with Harrison Ford and I think some other guys, but I can't remember now the thing. I remember Harrison Ford, but I can't remember the rest, yeah. In 4 of July 1961, under the command of Captain First Rank Nikolai Vladimirovich Zatayev, and the other guy again, yeah, K-19 was conducting exercise in the North Atlantic off the southeast coast of Greenland. At 4:15 local time, the pressure in the starboard nuclear reactor cooling system dropped to zero. The reactor department crew found a major leak in the reactor coolant system, causing the coolant pumps to fail. The boat could not contact Moscow and require assistance because a separate accident had damaged the long-range radio system. Beautiful. Another one. The control rods were automatically inserted by the emergency scram system, but the reactor temperature rose uncontrollably. Decay heat from the fission products produced during a normal operation eventually heated the reactor to 800 degrees. Nice. If you wanna get a 10, that's there. Making a drastic decision, Zatayev ordered the engineering section to fabricate a new cooling system by cutting off an air vent valve in the wheel and wielding a water supply to pipe it. This required men to work in high radiation for extended periods. The jury-rigged cooling water system successfully reduced the temperature in the reactor. The accident released radioactive steam containing fission products that were drawn into the ship's ventilation system. Beautiful. And spread to other compartments of the ship. The entire crew was irradiated, as was most of the ship and some of the ballistic missiles on board. All seven members of the engineering crew and their divisional officer died in radiation exposure within the next month. Yeah, because the guys went, if you see the movie, yeah, the guys went to the reactor and tried to work it out, you know, and the guys were completely fucked. I think they died on the spot or something like that, but here it says that the next two, and in those days, the next month, yeah. 15 more sailors died within the next 2 years. Instead of continuing on the mission's planned route, the captain decided to head south to meet the diesel-powered submarines expected to be there. Worries about a potential crew mutiny prompted Zatayev to all small arms, pistols, yeah, thrown overboard except for 5 pieces distributed to his most trusted officer, a diesel Subaru S270 pickup K19 low power distress transmission, and joined up with it. That's the part that I think it was hidden because of sometimes, because of this. American warships nearby also heard the transmission and offered to help, but Zatayev, afraid to giving away Soviet military assistance to the West, refused and sailed to meet the S-270, the other submarine. He evacuated the crew and the boat and towed his home to his own base of the snub something, yeah? Several crew members received total fatal doses of radiation during repairs on the reserve cooling system of Reactor 8. 8 people died between 1 and 3 weeks after the incident from severe radiation sickness. A person who receives a dose to 4 to 5 SV, about 400 to 5,000 rem, which is a unit that mediates radiation, yeah, over a short period, have a 50% chance of dying within 30 days. That's what happened to them, yeah. 14 other crew members died within 2 years. Many of other crew members also received radiation doses exceeding permissible levels. They underwent medical treatment during the following year. Many others experienced chest pains, numbness, cancer, and a kidney failure. Their treatment was devised by Professor Z. Volinsky, and included bone marrow transplantation and blood transfusion. It saved, among others, Chief Lieutenant Mikhail Krashinkov and Captain Vladimir Yanin, who had received high doses of radiation that were otherwise considered deadly. For reason of secrecy, the official diagnosis was not radiation. But get this one out. Get this one out. But asteno-vegetative syndrome, a mental disorder. What the fuck, man? Come on. These guys in the Soviet Union were top. On 6th of August, 1961, 26 members of the crew were decorated for courage and valor shown during the incident. So I think they were heroes of the Soviet Union. Who gives a shit being a hero of the Soviet Union? That's the problem here, yeah? So I have like the even the you think that was decommissioned this boat because of radiation problems. So they clean it up. They did all the things, you know. I think they even, you know, like upgraded the thing. So I'm gonna tell us. In 14th of December 1961, the boot was fully upgraded to Hotel 2, because it was the second variant of the nuclear submarines. Yeah. Which upgraded where R-21 mission was at twice the effective range of the earlier missions, yeah? So it was upgraded, yeah? So, in 15th of November 1969, K-19 collided with the attack submarine USS Gato, which is an American submarine, nice, in the Barents Sea at a depth of 60 meters. And this was 60 meters. For a submarine, 60 meters is bullshit. It is. Trust me. And it was able to surface using an emergency main ballast tank blow, because that's where they go up like very fast, yeah? You see that in the movies, yeah? You know what I mean. The impact completely destroyed the bow sonar system and mangled the covers of the forward torpedo tube. The K-19 was able to return to port when it was repaired to the fleet. The Gato, you know, submarine, which is the American one, was relatively undamaged and continued patrol. So even in this was fucking cursed, this boat, from the beginning. You know, was the first one, you know, the first of his kind, and it all beating on bullshit. That's what I'm saying. Putin doesn't have fuel or petrol or money to keep with this war. That's why he wants to, you know, to get to Kiev and put a puppet over there, yeah? That's it, man. Don't be scared of him. He's just a fucking clown. You're not gonna do anything. Worry about China. Don't worry about him. He's just a fucking clown, you know. He just juggles his balls, you know, in front of people, you know. Just don't worry, you know. Then in his operational history, he had a lot of fires, yeah. But one in the worst one was this one. On February of 24th of February 1972, a fire broke out while the submarine was at depth of 120 meters. Check it out. This one was bad. Some 1,300 kilometers from Newfoundland in Canada. The boat surfaced and the crew was evacuated to surface warships, except for 12 men trapped in the aft torpedo room. Towing was delayed by a gale and the rescue could not reach the aft torpedo room because of condition in the engine. The fire killed 28 sailors aboard K-19 and two others died after they were transferred to rescue ship. Investigators determined that the fire was caused by a hydraulic fuel leak onto a hot filter. Yeah, so the rescue operation lasted for more than 40 days, involving over 30 ships. From 15 of June to 5 of November 1972, the K-19 was repaired and put back on service. Yeah. In 15 of November 1972, same year, another fire broke out in compartment 6, but it was put out by a chemical fire extinguisher system, and there was no casualties. And it was decommissioned in 1991. I think it was after the fall of the Soviet Union. So I think this fucking thing was just doing numbers, you know? It was great, man. How can a fucking nation, a fucking military system, they are a joke. The Soviet Union were a joke. Man, I said, like, I don't like the Americans, yeah? And trust me, I don't like the Russians as well. But fucking hell, man. The Soviet Union was the most evil. I think I'm not going to compare with the Nazis because the Nazis were really evil. But fucking hell, man, the Soviet Union was a bunch of clusterfucks all the time. It was just like, you know, keeping up. But they don't have, like, the capacity that, for example, the America or the United States have. You know, it's just a joke. It's just like, it's like Putin, you know. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. They're going to do fuck all, man, and it doesn't have money. It's just, you know, this war is just for covering what he had, the money that he stole from the Russian people for years. It's stupid. But okay. And now, we're going to talk about what I think is one of the forgotten, you know, genocides of history, yeah? And people don't, if you are from the Ukraine, you got to know this, yeah? The Holodomor, you know, it's like it was a genocide of Ukrainian people, because, you know, in the Soviet days, yeah, at the inception of the Soviet days, you know, there was a lot of a famine in the Soviet Union. This is one of them, you know. There's more in Kazakhstan, there was more in Central Russia, there was a lot of them, yeah, because of the I can remember now, it was like there was a thing that they tried to make the agriculture, you know, in service of the state. I can't remember the term now, but I'm going to get there. You know, but that was the thing, you know. And people, you know, didn't want that or didn't work. And, you know, I think the 7 to 8 million died. But I'm gonna read about it. Bear with me, yeah. The Holodomor, yeah. In translation, yeah, I think this is in Russian or Ukrainian, is to be killed by starvation, yeah. Also known as the Terror Famine of the Great Famine, was a famine in Soviet Ukraine. So this was like when they were. Then people ask why Ukraine is so pissed with the Russians and they don't want to stay there. I think this one is the main reason. Yeah, from 1932 to 1933, that killed millions of Ukrainians. It was a large part of a wider Soviet famine. That's what I'm saying. Kazakhstan and stuff like that. There was a lot of them. The third Holodomor emphasized the famine's man-made, yeah, and allegedly intentional aspects such as rejection of outside aid, confiscation of all household foodstuffs, and restriction of the population movement, part of the wider Soviet famine in 1932-1933, which affected the major grain-producing areas of the country. Millions of inhabitants of Ukraine, and the majority of whom ethnic Ukrainians, yeah, died of starvation in a peacetime catastrophe unprecedented in the history of Ukraine. Since 2006, the Holodomor has been recognized by Ukraine and 15 other countries as a genocide of the Ukrainian people carried out by the Soviet government. Yeah, so this is one of them. Yeah, I think that's why they want to go to the West and don't go to Russia, because this shit happens. Of course, the people that you know, perpetrated this act is dead for a long time. Nobody's going to discuss that. The problem is like the way that this thing was orchestrated. I'm going to get there. Yeah? Early estimates of death toll by scholars and government officials varied greatly. So this is discussed. Yeah, a United Nations joint statement signed by 25 countries in 2003 declared that 7 to 10 million perished. Current scholarship is estimates are ranged to 4 to 7 million visits, with more precise estimates from 3.3 to 5 million. According to the findings of the court appeal in Kiev, in 2000, the demographic losses due to famine amounted to 10 million, with 3.9 million direct famine deaths and with 6.1 million birth defects. Fuck. Whether the Holodomor was genocide is still the subject of the academic debate, as we were saying. As there are the causes of the famine and intentionally of the deaths, some scholars believe that the famine was planned by Joseph Stalin to eliminate a Ukrainian independence movement. Others suggest that a man-made famine was the consequence of Soviet industrialization. That's what I was saying about that thing with the farmers and stuff like that, yeah? So we're going to talk about the law of spikelets, yeah? So this one was the law that, you know, the famine, at the, let's say, was the orchestration of the famine. But I'm not going to talk about it. You can check it online if you want, you know. It's a little bit, you know, boring, you know, and I don't want to screw up the rhythm, yeah? The famine affected the Ukrainian SSR, as well the Moldavian Autonomous Soviet Social Republic, as part of the Ukrainian SSR at the time. It's a little thing near Romania. It's a country now as well, yeah? In spring 1942 and from February to July 1933, with the most victims recorded in spring 1933, the consequences are evident in demographic statistics. Between 1926 and 1939, the Ukrainian population increased by only 6.6, whereas Russian Belarus grew by 16.9 and 11.7 respectively. Yeah, this is like a little bit of statistics, but it's true. Yeah, check. It's less than for Russia, it's less 10%, and from Belarus was like 6 or 7. So start thinking about it. You know, this was like the thing. You start seeing that, you know, it's like the obliteration of a people. Yeah, check this one out. From the 1932 harvest, Soviet authorities were able to procure only 4.3 million tons as compared with 7.2 million tons obtained by the 1931 harvest. Rations in town were drastically cut back, and in winter 1932-33 and spring 1933, the people in many urban areas starved. Urban workers were supplied by a rationing system and therefore could occasionally assist their starving relatives in the countryside. But rations were gradually cut, and by spring 1933, urban residents also faced with starvation. At the same time, workers were shown agit-drop movies depicting peasants as counter-revolutionaries who hid grain in potatoes at a time when workers were constructing the bright future of socialism. So this was like the industrial revolution, for example, here in England, yeah? And the Soviet industrialization, you know, the process in modern day Russia, the Soviet Union, you know, was half-assed. You know, they have to get there because they have to show the Americans, ah, fucking hell, we are here, Soviet is the top of the top of the top. It's fucking lies. Lies between lies. That's what, man, and I'm thinking about this like 70 to 80 years because it's 1932 or more than 90 years, yeah? We're still getting the same fucking lies about these people. The Russian governments, they don't change. It's like the leopard doesn't lose his spots, yeah? So the same fucking thing. It's like, I respect a lot of Russians. I have Russian friends, Bulgarian friends. Trust me, I know these kind of things, and I respect them a lot. But I could never respect the governments they have. Never, never, because it's fucking mental. You know, it's just like you have to. It's like a show off routine every fucking time we get there. So that's what I'm saying, man. Don't worry about him. It's like a show off. It's just showing off his penis. But when you start getting through him, you're going to see this a very small penis, yeah? So, man, this is bullshit, man. This is bullshit. He's just wiggling his cock out, you know? He's a fucking clown, man. Nobody has to. That's why the United States and the rest of the guys, you know, were not worried. Because, man, trust me, he doesn't want to use nuclear weapons or something like that. He doesn't have the fucking balls to do it. He doesn't. He doesn't because of the problems that nuclear wars bring, yeah? Okay, because the world starts to be like Mad Max or something like that, man. Who's want to live in a place like that? Of course not. It's a weapon for impotence. It's never going to be used. You know, it's a deterrent. Yeah, if you fuck with me, I'm going to give you nuclear. That's it. You're never going to use them. If you want to, for example, if Russia wanted to use them, when they were, you know, after the fall of the Soviet bloc, they would use them. Trust me. No, you don't have to have fear of these people. It's just jokes. Yeah, but let's get through this part, yeah? The bright 50-year-olds socially were starving. The first reports of mass malnutrition and deaths from starvation emerged from two urban areas in the city of Uman, reporting in January 1933 by Vinnytsia and Kiev oblasts, yeah? This was like some cities or something like that. By mid-January 1933, there were reports about mass difficulties with food in urban areas, which had been undersupplied to the rationing system, and deaths from starvation. Among people who refused ration, according to December of 1932 decree of the Central Committee of the Ukrainian Communist Party, by the beginning of February 1940, according to reports from the local authorities, yeah, the most affected area was the Dnipro Oblast, which is like a city or something, that district, yeah, was also suffered from epidemics of typhus and malaria. Odessa and Kiev Oblasts were the second and the third, respectively. By mid-March, most of the reports of starvation originated from the Kiev Oblast. By mid-April 1933, Kharkiv Oblast reached the top of the most affected list, while Kiev, Odessa, Vinnytsia, and the next oblast and the Moldavian SSR was next on the list. Reports about mass deaths and starvation dated mid-May through the beginning of June 1933, originated from rayons in Kiev and Kharkiv oblasts. The less affected list noted the Chernihiv oblast and northern parts of Kiev and Vinnytsia oblasts. The Central Committee of the Ukraine decree in 1933 said no longer cases and should have remained untreated. Local authorities had to submit reports about the number suffering from hunger. The reasons for the hunger, number of deaths from hunger, food aid provided from the local sources and centrally provided food aid required. The GPU managed parallel reporting and food assistance in the Ukrainian SSR. Many regional reports and the most central summary reports are available from present-day central regional Ukrainian archives, which was tracking the situation in 1933 and reported difficulties in communication to the appalling situation in Ukraine. So, I'm going to tell you this, man. This was like a man-made hunger, because what I read a book where they hid like the grain and the rationing and stuff. The thing they plant, you know, like at least grain, you know, to do the thing, and the problem was they put it on graveyards in camps, you know, like, for example, where they put the dead, they take the dead out and they put like, they make a silo or something like that. And, man, it's like homemade silos, yeah? So this was like the thing. It was like people hiding food to live. It's fucking crazy, man, serious. How can you, as a Ukrainian, wanted to go back to that? I wouldn't, to be honest. I wouldn't. They were they are my enemy. They are not my brothers. They are not. We are not a part of that fucking thing. It's just like that, man. But give me just a break, man, because you know we got on the fly. Yeah, we do it this like that. But I'm going to talk about another thing that maybe shocks somebody: cannibalism. In those days, just give me a second, please. Hello again, you guys, and sorry about the delay. That's why this podcast is like this, is always on the fly and is always like real. This is like, you know, we don't edit anything. That's what happens, and that's the way we roll, right? And I think it's gonna and it's our way of doing things that, you know, I think you guys like this podcast. It's just like, you know, like the pirate radios. It's a little bit nuts, yeah. All right. So in this situation was evidence of cannibalism, yeah. And if people start thinking about it, this is nuts as well. So the evidence of widespread cannibalism was this documented during the Holodomor. Survival was a morale as well as physical struggle. A woman doctor wrote to a friend in June 1933 that she had not yet become a cannibal, but was not sure that I shall not be by the time my letter reaches you. I'm not going to be a cannibal before my letter reaches you, man. This is like real stuff. You can laugh, but it was real, real in the ground, yeah? It was just nuts. the good people died first. Those who refused to steal or to prostitute themselves died. Those who gave food to others died. Those who refused to eat corpses died. Those who refused to kill their fellow men died. Parents who resisted cannibalism died before their children did. Check this. Of course, we can laugh about the letter because it's a little bit, you know, like dark humor. But in this one, check this out. They refused to die. They had to see their children died before they start using cannibalism. What fucking choice do you have? You know, it's just serious. It's just nuts. The Soviet regime printed posted the credit, "To eat your own children is a barbarian act." What the fuck? They were inflicting the hunger. It's those things, you know, that I can register with some, you know, some events in through history. It's crazy. Serious. More than 2,500 people were convicted of cannibalism during the Holodomor. They were convicted. Nice. In the summer of 1930, the government instituted a program of food requisitioning. Ostensibly, to increase grain exports, food theft was made punishable by death or to 10 years imprisonment. Yeah, at least with the 10 years in prison, they got food, yeah. Stupid. Food exports continued during the famine, albeit in a reduced rate. In regard to exports, Michael Ellman states that 1932 and 1933 grain exports amounted to 1.8 million tons, which would have been enough to feed 5 million people for 1 year. It was proposed. See, they keep on getting money. Nice. It was proposed that the Soviet leadership used the man-made famine to attack Ukrainian nationalism, and thus it called a fall under the legal definition of genocide. For example, special and particular lethal policies were adopted and largely limited to Soviet Ukraine. At the end of 1932 to 1933, according to the Timothy Snyder, which is like a journalist, each of them may be seen as an anodyne administrative measure. And each of them was certainly presented at such time, and yet each had to kill. Yeah, under the collectivism policy, which was the thing I talked about, that policy that I was talking about, the internationalization, this one, for example, farmers were not only deprived of their properties, but a large swath of these were exiled to Siberia with no means to survival. Those who were left behind and attempted to escape the zones of famine were ordered shot. There were foreign individuals who witnessed this atrocity and its effects. For example, there was an account of Arthur Koestler, an Hungarian British journalist, which described the peak years all over the in these words. At every train, there was a crowd of peasants in rags, offering icons and linen in exchange for a loaf of bread. The women were lifting up their infants to the compartment windows, infants pitiful and terrifying with limbs like sticks, puffed bellies, big cadaverous heads, and loiling thin necks. Sorry about the English, but this is what the expensive English. Yeah? I just don't know the cheap one. Several repressive policies were implemented in Ukraine during the famine, including but not limited the law of speakless, the one I talked, blacklisting, the internal passport system, and the harsh grain requisitions. The decree about the protection of socialist property, nicknamed by the farmers as the Law of Speakless was enacted in August 7, 1932. The purpose of the law was to protect the property of the Colcott's collective farms. It was nicknamed the Law of Speakless because it allowed people to be present for gleaning. Gleaning is like, if people know a little bit of English, gleaning is the leftover that you get on the fields. You're not going to get everything, yeah? There was always going to be some onions, some carrots, some potatoes, whatever, that still stay on the ground. So these people, you know, for example, do the crop, yeah? And then they go get the leftovers. You know, it's like a bonus or something like that, yeah? The gleaning of leftover grain from the fields. There were more than 200,000 people sentenced under this law. Check it out. Because you're stealing to eat, yeah? Fucking hell. The blacklist system was formalized in 1932 by November 20th decree. The struggle against the Kirkcool influence in collective farms blacklisted synonymous with the Board of Infamy was one of the elements of agitation propaganda in the Soviet Union and especially Ukraine. And the ethnically Ukrainian Kuban region in the 1930s, a blacklisted collective farm village or rayon, as is monetary loans and grain advances calling, stores closed, grain supplies, livestock and food confiscated as a penalty. Nice. And it was cut off from trade. Its communist guard, the collective farm committees, were purged and subject to arrest. And their territory was forcibly cordoned off by the Okbu secret police. This is like a president of, the KGB. Although normally targeting collective farms, failing to meet grain quotas, and independent farmers with outstanding tax in kind, in practice, the punishment was applied to all residents of affected villages and rayons, including teachers, tradespeople, and children. In the end, at least 400 collective farms were put in the blackboard in Ukraine, more than a half of them on the Dnipropetrovsk Oblast alone. Every single rayon of the Dnipropetrovsk, sorry, man, I'm not Russian, and at least one blacklisted village, and in Vinnytsia Oblast, five entire regions were blacklisted. The oblast, situated right in the middle of traditional lands in the Zaporizhzhia Cossack village, were also blacklisted in the Volga and Kuban region of Russia. Some blacklisted areas like Kharkiv could have death rates exceeding 40%, while other areas such as Stalino blacklisting has no prefectory effect on of mortality. So check this out. This was fucking crazy. Even me have like difficult reading this stuff because it's not that, you know, I can't read. It's just because it sickens me. Trust me, I loathe these people. You know, that's why it gets to me. You know, even you're reading this, it gets you sad. You know, that's why I do this podcast. You know, sometimes two people. That's why I say this one was a serious one. You know, sometimes you can, you know, me and my son and stuff like that, we can joke about these guys because they don't have any defense. These people don't have any defense as well. But this is a genocide. We don't joke about these things. So this one was really to remember people what is, but I'm gonna continue again. And then there was more, yeah? And we got one that is the passport system in the Soviet Union, yeah? This was another one, yeah? The passport system in the Soviet Union, the identity cards, was introduced in 27 of December 1932 to deal with the exodus of peasants from the countryside. Individuals not having such documents could not leave their homes on pain of administrative penalties, such as internment in labor camps, a gulag, yeah? Joseph Stalin signed the 1933 secret decree named the Preventing the Mass Exodus of Peasants Who Are Starving. Come on, how can you hack this fucking thing, man? Bastard. Restricted travel by peasants, often after requests for bread, began in the Cuban and Ukraine Soviet authorities. Blamed the exodus of peasants during the famine on anti-Soviet elements, saying that, like the flow from Ukraine last year, was organized by the enemies of Soviet power. There was a wave of migration due to starvation, and authorities responding by introducing a requirement that passports be used to go between republics and banning travel by rail. During a single month in 1933, 219,460 people were either intercepted and escorted back or arrested and sentenced. It was being estimated that there were in excess of 150,000 deaths as a result of this policy, and one historian asserts that these deaths constitute a crime against humanity. Of course it is. In contrary, historian Stephen Kotkin argues that the sealing of the Ukrainian borders caused by the internal passport system was in order to prevent the spread of famine-related diseases. Bullshit! Between January and mid-April 1933, a factor contributing to the surge of deaths within a certain region of Ukraine during the period was a relentless search for alleged hidden grain by the confiscation of all foodstuffs from certain households, which Stalin implicitly approved through a telegram he sent on 1 of January 1933 to the Ukrainian government, reminding Ukrainian farmers of severe penalties for not surrendering grain that it might be hiding. Come on, what? Who the fuck cares if you tell me that you have to surrender the grain? I'm gonna eat. That's it. This is famine. You can when you don't eat, your brain starts not to think right. Yeah. Who gives a fuck if I'm gonna get that? I'm gonna get that anyway by starvation. Who the fuck cares? That's basically the point. These Soviet people are completely nuts. Serious. And in this review, Anne Applebaum's book, Mark Togger gives a rough estimate of those who were affected by the search of hidden grain reserves. In chapter 10, Applebaum describes the harsh searches that local personnel, often Ukrainian, imposed on villages, based on Ukrainian memoir collection 222. And she presents many vivid anecdotes. She never explains how many people these actions affected. She cites an Ukrainian decree from November 1932 calling for 1,011 brigades to be formed, 229. This is like the thing, yeah? In each of these 1,100 brigades, search 100 households and a peasant household at 5 people. Then they took food from about 550,000 people out of 20 million, about 2 to 3%, in order to make for unfulfilled grain procurement quotas in the Ukraine. Come on, fucking hell. Jesus, I'm always crying when I do this shit. Reserves of grain were confiscated from the source, included to the Oleunaya, something like that, yeah? Grain set aside for the next harvest, grain fund to or emergency grain issued to the collective farmers for previously completed work which had returned in the collective form did not fulfill its quota. So, man, come on. This is like crazy, serious, man. It's like we are talking about this, but, you know, it gives you, like, the idea of these fucking people, man. It's like nuts. In Ukraine, there was a widespread purge of Communist Party officials at all levels. According to Ole Oliana, 30 and 90 anti-Soviet counter-revolution insurgent and chauvinist groups were eliminated, resulting in 37,797 arrests that led to 719 executions, 8,003 people being sent to the Gulag camps, and 2,728 being put to internal exile. 120,000 individuals in Ukraine were reviewed in the first 10 months of 1933 and in a top-bottom purge for the Communist Party, resulting in 23% being eliminated as perceived as class-hostile elements. You know, it's crazy. Serious, man. You're just trying to eat. This is what people have, man. That's what I'm saying, man. I like Russia. I don't have any problem with Russian people. I have against these kind of guys, Soviets. That's what he's trying to get, the golden age of the fucking Soviet Union, Putin. And he's going to fail. Serious, man. Nobody's going to let anybody go back to this. This is fucking crazy. People that are getting shot in the head for trying to eat. Fuck it, man, give me the shot in the head. My ailment gonna finish quickly. That's it. Fuck. It's nuts. But, you know, we can really talk about this because it's very big, but I'm gonna tell you this. I'm gonna finish now because I was gonna finish about the Ukrainians that were, for example, they were persecuted in different regions, yeah, where not only the things that they die of starvation as well. I could read this shit for a long time, but I'm getting like depressed here, so I'm not gonna read anymore, because this shit really pisses me off, because it's really scum of the earth, yeah. So we're gonna try to do a Black Nose Day event again, if we think about it. I don't know, maybe we're gonna get to the black lines after, yeah. But guys, this situation is serious, but don't really panic, yeah. This is a clown, and there's more clowns in history that are gonna be crushed by just like common sense. You can't let these people win, and he's not gonna win. And people think that's what he's trying to do again. This is what I read here, what he did to the Ukrainians in 1933. Yeah, it was before the war started, yeah. This was before the war started. It was a genocide before the Jews started, you know. There's more genocides, but this is the one, yeah. People getting shot in the head for eating, or because they didn't give their grain to the Soviet party. It's nuts. Serious, man. Don't let this guy win. He's not gonna win, because, you know, simple human common sense is gonna defeat him. He can't. You know, he's never gonna use a nuclear weapon. No worries. Nobody's gonna let him. And for me, I think that the Russian people should put a gun to his head, and he make peace with everything he did, and kill him. That's it. He's not gonna live through this, man. When the military, you know, start to don't get paid, and they don't eat, and the people don't eat, you're gonna see where he's going. So guys, from us here, you know, it's just me today, you know, but from us here, it's like, you know, keep safe. Don't worry, you know, keep your wits about it. You know, we've been through COVID, now we're going through this shit. We're going to go through a lot more. So, you know, hang tight. We're going to get through this. Okay, peace, bye.
Hitler has only got one ball. The other is in the Albert Hall. His mother, that dirty grubber, cut it off. When he was small, she threw it into the Concord tree. He fell into the deep blue sea.
The fishes
cut up their dishes and had scallops and bollocks for tea.
Hitler
has only got one ball.
Hitler.
But for Roger Holes, has no balls!
At all!
No balls at all!